You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a really special guest for all of you this afternoon. I'm extremely privileged and humbled to be joined by General Russell, Honoré. He's a decorated 37-year Army veteran. He's a global authority on leadership, an expert on climate change and disaster preparedness. And he certainly had his fill of disaster response. He was the commander of Joint Task Force Katrina and became known as the Category 5 General for his leadership in coordinating military relief efforts in post-hurricane New Orleans. He also led the security review of the U.S. Capitol's security infrastructure following the attacks on January 6th, 2021. He is a true American hero, and he's here with us on Civic Media. Welcome, General. Thank you for being here.
Well, it's good to be with you. God bless America.
God bless America, sir. I couldn't agree with you more. Let's jump right in to climate. In preparing myself for our discussion today, you know, I have repeatedly made the argument that our adversaries in the world, read Russia, China, they are making preparations that account for climate change. And when you look at the globe and you look particularly at the proximity of the United States to, for example, Russia, on the North Pole, as those ice caps melt, those will continue to be incredibly crucial shipping lanes, and we have to be accounting for climate change in our national security planning and in our preparedness for these things. And General, I wanted to ask you, what did you learn from Katrina that you want regular folks to understand about how crucial it is for both our military and intelligence, but how crucial it is for our national security interests for us to be very, very clear that climate change is real and it is happening?
Well, I think when you look at the lessons learned from Katrina and the strength of the storm and the temperature of the Gulf when Katrina made landfall was record high, as was the case last year with Hurricane Helene and Milton, the highest temperature in the Gulf, which fuels the hurricanes, which made these three hurricanes part of history, in that Katrina came in as a Category 5, made landfall as a Category 3, and hit Louisiana, then turned toward Mississippi and put a 27-foot tidal surge in Biloxi, Mississippi. It was a historic storm that killed nearly 1,900 people along the coast of Louisiana and Mississippi. And there's an attribute to Katrina because the ocean was so warm because of global warming, which is one of the side effects of climate change, in that we are man-made products are going into the air, primarily methane and others. The carbon that's going into the air is creating conditions where we've got sea level rise, as well as oceans are warming and the ice cap melting, which will change the landscape. As far as national security, we will have to invest significant amount of money in our ports. The Port of New Orleans export 43% of U.S. exports in terms of tonnage. Our East Coast ports, which host the Atlantic Naval Fleet, those ports, many of them have to be reworked for 2 or 3 inches rise in the ocean could impact the reworking or reconstruction of those ports to be able to handle high tides, because it's a multiplying impact with 3-inch sea rise along with ocean warming. The same thing with our West Coast ports. They will have to be restructured and re-engineered to be able to deal with 2 to 3-inch rise in ocean water, because it has a cumulative effect. Those are the big issues facing our national security. And, you know, our nuclear Navy is on the East and West Coast. And in the littorals in the Pacific, many places we have naval as well as ground forces, and they will lose land with sea level rise and be subject to more and more impact of global warming, if we may use that term, which is attributed to man-made global warming, which raising the temperature and the level of the sea. So it is a significant, but it's global impact. It's not just America, it's the world.
Folks, that's General Russell Honoré, also known as the Category 5 General, for his work coordinating the military relief efforts after Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. General, what was your reaction when the Trump administration earlier this year stripped the Environmental Protection Agency of the ability to regulate carbon emissions, the things that cause the global warming, that add to the sea level rise, that are changing these global security dynamics, that are costing American taxpayers billions and billions of dollars to make the infrastructure repairs and improvements that you're describing, sir?
Needless to say, even adult television, I was very disappointed, not to use the words I would normally use, a blank, blank. It was very discouraging to see that they have stooped to this level of deregulation. And just last week, the EPA, I'm sure you saw, have told the plants, don't worry about it. We're not coming to inspect what you're putting in the air or what you're putting in the water. A total reversal of the Clean Air and Clean Water Act. And that will have irreversible, permanent damage to our environment and to our water system, because the impact of what goes on the ground in surface water can end up in our drinking water. So it's a violation of the Clean Water Act and the Clean Drinking Water Act. This goes back to when the river in Cleveland caught fire.
Yes.
When industry said, hey, don't worry about it. Dilution is a solution for pollution. And they kept dumping chemicals in the Cognoa River and it caught fire, which was a motivating factor for the White House to push into Congress the Clean Water Act to prevent the amount of chemicals that could go into our surface water. And that lake is still not clean. Those many years later, and was a message to the world and to industry, you do not have the right to put everything you want in our surface water, because somebody downstream has to drink that water. The city of New Orleans drink water out of the Mississippi River, which 31 states dump their sewage, the industrial waste, and the agricultural waste come down the Mississippi River, and New Orleans have to clean it to be able to drink it. And now we've got something, Maggie, called the invisible chemicals. It takes very special testing to be able to find it, and it's out there. So water, drinking water, I think will be a motivating factor for future regional wars, because people will be fighting over water, because only 1% of the Earth's water is drinkable. The rest of it, if you want to drink it, you got to clean it.
You got to clean it. Folks, again, that's General Russell Honoré. And General, you anticipated my next question, which was the Trump administration report saying that they have basically wink, wink, nudge, nudge, told plants and manufacturers, don't worry, we're not going to enforce the Clean Air and the Clean Water Act. By the way, Clean Air Act was under Nixon, for crying out loud. People forget
exactly
that. And the Clean Water Act was adopted over his veto, a rebuke from Congress. So critical that people understand what's at risk. Remember, folks, billionaires, they'll always have clean air and clean water. Us regular folks that have bosses and paychecks, we're the ones at risk. General,
let's put a pin on that. Maggie, also, you remember that President Reagan went after industry because the trees in the Northwest were dying.
Yep.
So it's not just what Nixon and Carter did to impose regulation. President Reagan said, hey, you know, you got to clean up this acid rain. It was killing trees in the Northwest and going into Canada. and they enforce regulations. And you know what? When you put the heat on the plants, they'll clean it up.
No doubt. Thank you for that history reminder. General, I wanted to ask you this. When we look at climate change-induced disasters like hurricanes and the wildfires that we've seen, the tragic flooding both in North Carolina and Texas of this year, how does that put a strain on our military's resources and our overarching emergency response capabilities? These costs are now in the hundreds of billions every year that have to be dedicated to this, the repair, the cleanups, decades sometimes of repairs that are required. That price tag will only accelerate. Is it just simply about the money, sir? Or is there more impacts, again, on our military preparedness and our other emergency response capabilities?
Well, I think it's an impact on all of the above. The general budget of the United States, which impact how much money is available to defend our nation from foreign aggression. It's a combination of all. In 2023, the government spent $2 billion helping people get back in their homes.
Yes.
But get this, Maggie, they spent $12 billion rebuilding parks, gyms, and schools as a result of hurricanes, tornadoes, and floods. And we've always had tornadoes, hurricanes, and floods. But what scientists will show you, and oh, by the way, the current administration has silenced the people who collect the data, the storms are coming more frequent. We are having a 100-year flood every 10 years.
It's
and in some communities, we're having a 100-year flood every 2 years.
It's interesting.
As a result of the impact of global warming.
Precisely, General, and I apologize for interrupting you, sir. That term, and we just had a 1,000-year flood here in the state of Wisconsin, those terms are actually completely outdated, right, because they're based on decades-old climate data, and the Trump administration, as you rightly pointed out, General, is shutting down the research into that would help us update that data and better understand communities' flood risks. The government is literally preventing us from understanding what our community risk levels are at, especially when it comes to flooding here in the state of Wisconsin. That's a big deal. We've got just about a minute left before we have to take our first set of messages here. What is the message that you want to tell to Wisconsinites and folks across the country about climate change when they hear the president and others in this administration denying or questioning its existence or the urgency of that concern for Americans?
Well, the young people are going to have to take charge. Our problem with climate change and global warming is that the Senate, the majority of the Senate don't believe in it. We got to get young people voted into office in the Senate and the Congress, because as long as we have this age group, they've been bought off by the oil and gas company. They have hijacked our democracy. We got to get the old people out of the Senate.
General Russell Honoré continues with me, Maggie Dawn, here on the Civic Media Radio Network on the other side. You're not going to want to miss a minute of this great discussion. Stay with us, folks.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome. If you're just joining me, I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm so excited to have my special guest for this half hour. He is General Russell Honoré, a decorated 37-year Army veteran. And he's been known as the Category 5 General as he led the coordination of the military relief efforts following Hurricane Katrina. He's won a Bronze Star, 5 Legion of Merit Awards, Distinguished Service Medal twice, 2 Defense Distinguished Service Medal, Meritorious Service Medal 4 times, Army Commendations. I could basically fill up the rest of our discussion this afternoon with all the awards that this man has won serving our country. General, first, we wanted to share your social media handles. You can find them on Facebook at Russell Honoré, and you can find them on X, also known as Twitter, at LTG Honoré. I know I'll be following him next. General, one of your more recent acts of service to this country was that you led the security review of the U.S. Capitol security infrastructure following the January 6th insurrection. What I wanted to ask you was the importance about the military maintaining an apolitical stance, especially these days in the incredibly polarized environment that we see. Why is that so important for our nation's security and our democracy's stability for the military to always remain apolitical?
Because we said the Constitution. So regardless of who the president is, we remain consistent to our oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. And that is what's different, not based on any political priorities of who's at the White House, but we have to stay consistent with our support to the Constitution of the United States and the laws of the country and the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
General, a follow-up question to that. We've seen the Trump administration mobilize the National Guard without the request of governors. In California, he's doing so or is threatening to do so potentially in Illinois and other states. What are the risks associated with deployment of the National Guard specifically into cities during times of mass protests or even civil unrest? And what is your opinion about how best to manage such deployments to try to minimize any civil liberties concerns and I think some of the negativity that has surrounded these deployments most recently?
Well, let me answer your last question first.
Please.
In Illinois, during the last national convention, the governor of Illinois deployed the National Guard to provide security in support of the national convention. In New York, the governor of New York has deployed the National Guard in the subways and public transportation to provide additional security because the existing law enforcement couldn't cover all these areas. And they were both used successfully. In Louisiana, the governor of Louisiana, in collaboration with the Homeland Security during New Orleans Super Bowl this year, just this few months ago, deployed the National Guard in collaboration with local police after the terrorist attack that happened on New Year's time frame in New Orleans. After a terrorist attack, deployed hundreds of National Guard to come in the city to work with the police in preparation for the Super Bowl that happened in New Orleans in 2025 and parts of Mardi Gras. And they were deployed effectively. The National Guard worked under the control of the governor, as they did in Illinois and can currently work in New York. That model works, where the National Guard extend the ability of the police to walk streets and provide presence patrol under the limitation of what they can do under the governor. Under the governor, the National Guard can be given authority by the governor to detain people that might have broken the law. They don't do investigative work. They hold them until the scenario is till police get there and the police do their duty. That scenario works. There are a lot of people concerned about the presence of the National Guard on daily in the French Quarter, that this will create an environment that you're now declaring as an emergency in New Orleans. People don't want to go to a place that's under emergency. Mm. And it's showing out to play itself out. It played itself out in California when the Marines and Guard was deployed to California. People stopped going out at night. There are reports that in D.C., yeah, you've got more National Guard presence. You've got some decrease in what they say small crimes and misdemeanors. But it's also had a damper on the tourism in D.C. So the negative impact is nobody want to go someplace that's under armed guards all the time, because you just might chance have a run-in with the police. The other impact it's having, and we're not talking about, is that when the National Guard go in, you have an increased ICE presence.
Yes.
And their mission is to pick up people without cause, because the way they look or the way they speak or the way they dress, they can now be picked up. According to the Supreme Court of the United States, you could stop people indiscriminately based on where they work and what, how they look and how they talk, indiscriminately. And I think that's going to be the most disturbing thing, not the Louisiana National Guard in New Orleans. They've done it before. But what is going to be unusual is the number of ICE agents picking brown people up and people of color because they don't look like them, and incarcerating them and shipping them out of the country. And the impact that could have in New Orleans is our service worker. The essential workers that clean that place, many of them are immigrants, and their paperwork could be questionable. That is the big concern I have.
Folks, that's General Russell Honoré, guest of the Maggie Dawn Show. Thank you, sir, for your service to this country and for your wisdom that you shared with all of us here on the Civic Media Radio Network this afternoon. Folks, when we come back, I'll be joined by Senator Kristen Dassler-Alfheim. We're going to talk about that insurance bomb that's about to drop come November 1st. If you or someone you love gets their insurance off the ACA exchange, you're going to want to listen. Stay tuned. Got nothing but love for my next guest. She's a frequent contributor here on the Maggie Dawn Show. It is Senator Kristen Dassler-Alfheim from Appleton. Welcome back to the show. And I do want to just break some news. This reporting just got posted a short while ago on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And then we'll turn to the question of the exchanges and the premiums that people are going to be facing come November 1st. Here's the breaking news. Recently released documents by the city of Racine, which they only released after they were sued, regarding water usage for a Microsoft data center that is going in Mount Pleasant, is indicating that the expansion of the data center, which is planned, could increase water usage there to 8.4 million gallons of Lake Michigan water per year. Holy cow. It's boggling. This is going to be the next problem that we have, right? Like all the AI data centers sucking up a bunch of water. I don't know where they're going to get it all. Did you know, too, that they are re-upping 4 Mile Island for what? To produce the electricity to run a series of big AI data centers out east. More on that soon. I will read that article and talk to you all about it more tomorrow, but I wanted to share that headline with you. Welcome back to the show, Senator. We got to talk some insurance, a super sexy topic that everyone loves to hear about, but this one's super important. Tell us what the problem is. I talked about this a little bit yesterday, but, and I wanted to give some love before I hand it off to you to Michael from Madison. He texted me yesterday and he said, Maggie, you only mentioned folks that might have small businesses or own their own businesses that get their insurance from the exchanges or early retirees. Maggie, you failed to mention the millions of folks that do not have employer-provided health insurance, and you didn't mention farmers, many, most of whom in our state have to go to the exchanges. Michael, thank you so much for that correction. I was trying to also speak to folks that may be on the Trump-inclined end of the spectrum, if you know what I'm saying, and point out that it's going to hit them too. So with that, yeah. Senator, thank you for your patience. Tell us what the problem is.
Yeah, the problem is the word insurance immediately makes people's eyes glass over and reach for an alcohol beverage. That is the real issue. So I am trying desperately to help the general public understand what a big deal is going on. We know with the reconciliation bill, the big, bad, whatever you want to call it, bill, that the Congress decided not to re-up the second level of subsidies in the Affordable Health Care Act. Now, again, some people know that that's a big deal. Many people jumped up on that, especially those, you know, that were receiving the first benefit and the second. But a lot of us just kind of let it slide. And this is what I need people to understand, is it's not just that they are taking away a subsidy. It's that what happens, the consequence of the subsidy going away and what that has done in a ripple effect to the entire industry of the marketplace, which there by default means everyone on the marketplace is directly impacted in a large way. Helping people understand this. First, the loss of the subsidies, right? So the Biden era subsidies gave credit to those that were at 131% of the poverty all the way up to 400. That's a lot of people, by the way. A lot of people have gotten an extra bump in tax relief or premium relief. It feels the same way. In essence, it saved them a lot of money. Removing that subsidy immediately impacted people that they're the loss. So now, in essence, what they're paying out of pocket is far more. That's one issue, but it's not the biggest issue. The biggest issue is that because of the loss of subsidies, actuarially, the insurance industry knows that if someone's premium, and I used a great example yesterday, 60-year-old couple in Wisconsin making $80,000 a year, that puts them at 401% or 400%, whatever it is, that couple is going to go from roughly $7,000 in annual premium to $25,000. Now, we're thinking there's no way who's got that money. The answer is nobody.
Nobody
has that money. So the natural reaction of that couple is to not take a fully insured program, but to walk away and instead to go to one of these catastrophic plans that will do checkup. It'll be a little wellness check, and then it'll be $10,000 out of pocket before it pays a bill. Catastrophic plans. They're going to do that because it's going to give them an alternative that is much similar to a bronze, probably a little bit less than a bronze plan. That causes multiple issues. One, you can talk about down the line, all the families that do not have $10,000 to throw at a medical bill if something catastrophic does happen. You can talk about the fact that a sprained wrist is probably going to cost them $1,500 that they don't have in the bank and all of the bankruptcies that will come from that. But that's still not the issue. The issue is when the healthiest of the insurance area leave the fully covered plans, that means you have fewer lives insured with a higher claims rate, a higher claims expectation. The insurance industry, nonprofit and for-profit, and before anybody reacts, I know healthcare stinks, right? That's a given. This is an additional issue. When the insured pool shrinks and the claims experience of them go up, it causes the actuarial math to change. We know that the rates for the 2026 marketplace are going to change dramatically. The nonprofits asked for an increase of roughly 9 to 12%. So people would have dealt with an increase plus the loss of subsidies. That's already a big deal. The for-profits filed for and received increases of 31 and 34%. That's a lot more. Now, keep in mind, actuarially, we lost a nonprofit out of the marketplace in southern Wisconsin. All of the other insurance companies now have to pick up the slack of insurance. They have to absorb it. From a math standpoint, the nonprofits only filed for a 9 to a 12% increase. Remember, they're nonprofits. They're not cooking the books. They're not buying back stock shares. So for those nonprofits to be able to pick up and handle that math and stay solvent, they ask for an emergency rate change, a re-rate, they call it. That re-rate was denied by the state of Wisconsin because the OCI believed that unless all of them were going to re-rate, they shouldn't give any special privileges to any individual company. That led to the biggest nonprofit walking away. If they cannot go in the negative to be on the marketplace, we know already there are no less than 3 nonprofits that are not going to be in the marketplace. What that means in reality, in the Fox Valley, we had 7 providers in 2025. We know we will not have more than 3 in 2026. Of those 3, at least 2 of them have already acknowledged a 31 to 34% increase.
The for-profits.
So now when you come to your open enrollment meeting or you go online at healthcare.gov in November, when you look at your options, you're going to realize that you have far fewer than you had, and they are far, far more expensive. And to those of us that actually have real health issues, going to a high deductible or a catastrophic plan can't work. So if you've been in one of the nonprofits and your rates were already, let's call it 20% less than the for-profits, you now lost that option. You are going from the nonprofit to the profit and now up another 30%+, and you may have lost a subsidy. Keep in mind, every provider has a limited place of where you can actually go get medical attention. So you now may have lost the advantage of picking the doctor and the hospital of your choice.
It's terrible.
And it's going to be worse, because once the for-profits have the monopoly that they have walked into because of the falling of the dam events, guess what they're going to do? They're going to knock on the door of Wisconsin's OCI and say, listen, if you want us to take care of the people of Wisconsin, you're going to have to let us re-rate. And I'm not sure what Wisconsin is going to do about that, because we have no option but to be covered. Now, again, I am not placing blame on the state of Wisconsin. I think that the OCI is doing their very best to react to all of the chaos that is going on a national level. It is not their fault. What I'm saying is that in the state of Wisconsin, it is our job to take care of our people to the best of our ability. And the OCI's job is to maintain stability to the best of their ability. And I believe they're trying. The question is, what else can we do? Because the chaos is about to hit. And if we do not start talking about it now, if we do not get it out there so everyone realizes, because every kitchen table is going to be affected by this change. Every option we have in the state of Wisconsin needs to be utilized right now. One, get the action in DC. Get them to realize that this change in removing the subsidy, whether you received subsidies or not, by them removing the subsidies, it is having a massive impact on your kitchen table. It doesn't matter if you were receiving the subsidy or not. They must reinstate the subsidy to keep the industry from collapsing. If they don't, then the state of Wisconsin has to do everything in their power to maintain enough carriers to keep the people of Wisconsin healthy, to keep them going to the doctor and treating themselves and not running without. Running without coverage is bad for all of us. And in the end, it's going to be bad for the taxpayers of Wisconsin, I assure you.
And Senator Alfheim, well, you just landed on the last sort of domino effect that I wanted to talk about. And that is, when we are sicker and we don't have health insurance, people show up in emergency rooms, right? Because they don't have regular care. Hospitals right. have to provide care if someone is in a life-threatening situation. That means people, if you don't and you never have and you don't think you ever will get insurance off the ACA exchanges, it still impacts you.
Right.
Because as more people go underinsured or completely without health insurance, they will show up in the ERs, right?
Yep.
And that will end up raising your premiums as well.
That's
because
right.
that's how this works.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, my belief is that this was... these knock-on impacts were well known to the Trump administration, and that these incredibly cascading impacts were known, they were expected, and they are the intended impacts of the big, brutal bill, because it may, in fact, blow up the entire ACA. It may render it, in places like Wisconsin, so wobbled that it may collapse. We're gonna come back. I wanna talk with the senator more about what we can do in the face of this slow-moving tragedy for Wisconsin families, brought to you courtesy of Donald Trump and the MAGA regime. Don't go anywhere, I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. With me this half hour is State Senator Kristen Dostler-Alfheim. She's from Appleton. We're talking about what is we're watching it metaphorically, like a slow-moving catastrophe in the ACA exchanges. Remember, the enrollment period each year starts on November 1st. By the way, this year, the enrollment period is shorter, so get it done. Nobody likes doing this. It's a drag. But if you do need insurance from the ACA, get it done early. Here is the problem in brief. The big brutal bill gutted the subsidies for folks that are at 131% of the poverty line, which, by the way, the federal poverty rate is $15,000, which is insane. More on that later. From 131% of the poverty rate to 400%, the subsidy's gone. So, yes, we knew that it was going to be more expensive. But you would think folks that never got the subsidy before, well, their premiums will be about the same. That's what you would think. You would be wrong. Because what is going to happen is that for many people that were receiving the subsidy, that say might be at like the 401st percentage or the 135th percentage of the federal poverty rate, they won't be able to afford the coverage. So they simply won't get health insurance, or they will get the high deductible health plan, the catastrophic plan, which doesn't provide nearly the health care that they will need. What that means is that the full insurance, right, people that are remaining in those full insurance plans, not the HDHPs, there will be fewer of them and they will be sicker. That means that the risk to the insurance carrier, they're going to have more claims. It will be more costly. So the insurance carriers were able to adjust some of their rates for this coming year. But it's getting worse. It's having these cascading impacts. The rates, especially from the nonprofit insurance carriers here in the state of Wisconsin, those rate increases were, according to the senator, somewhere in the ballpark of 9 to 12% increase year over year. The for-profits, oh yeah, they're up in the 30s. They're increasing rates 30-plus percentage.
Right.
What's happening is that the nonprofit carriers, who were Wisconsinites' only hope to maybe still be able to afford some full coverage, full health insurance, they're dropping out. They're not going to provide insurance because it will take them under. They will become insolvent. This is happening in real time. We know it's happening. And we've got to do something about it. So, Senator, when I hand it back over to you, what should we be doing about this?
The number one thing that needs to be done, and again, I don't care who you are. If you are on the exchange, whatever your situation, you need to send emails and call your federal representatives, your senators, not just the one you like, but the one you don't like, your congressmen. You must continue to speak to them. DC is really the only place that can fix the problem. And both sides need to hear. You know they're not going to pick up the phone. You're going to be leaving a voicemail. My name is. I live in this county in Wisconsin in your district. I'm on the exchange. I cannot afford what's about to happen to me. I need more than three options available to me. Please reinstate the subsidy. Be very clear. In addition, in the state of Wisconsin, we are reacting, right? I know the governor and the OCI are doing everything in their power to try and react as quickly as this stuff is happening in DC. But the reality is that your legislatures don't understand health insurance either. So it's not necessarily on their radar. So put your calls and put your emails in to people like me. My name is, I live here. I'm concerned I won't be able to afford. Is there anything the state of Wisconsin can do to ensure we have enough carriers? Is there any pressure we can apply to DC to ensure we have the subsidies? If we don't communicate, there's a problem. There's no one fighting for it to be solved. And we do have champions. Tammy Baldwin has been out there since the beginning. She has. But her voice has not been heard by everyone that is actually impacted. So she doesn't have the support that she needs. We need to give her that support by ensuring that we're talking to everyone that has an opportunity to help.
Couple of things. You're going to call your congressman and our senators, both Ron Johnson and Tammy. She knows about it. You're going to tell all your friends about it that live in Wyoming and Florida and Virginia and wherever else. You're going to tell them to make these same phone calls. You're going to ask them to restore the subsidy. One, I'm going to add something to that list. You're going to ask them to put pressure on the Trump administration and DHHS to issue immediate guidance that permits states to allow their insurers to re-rate for 2026. Yep. To maintain robust numbers of carriers in the exchanges. This is essential. Ask them to tell DHHS to allow states to permit the re-rates. That is why it's not happening. I'll also say this, and this will be my last point for the afternoon, folks. If I was the chief legal officer of the Office of the Commissioner of Insurance in the great state of Wisconsin, let me tell you, I'd be reading those statutes to figure out some kind of way to permit the insurance carriers in this great state to re-rate without some oversight blessing from DC. I hope they're looking at it. I hope you hear us. Please, if there is some way to make a cogent legal argument that the re-rate can be permitted under current guidance and statutes, do it. For the love of all that is good and holy, please do it. Last thoughts to you, Senator Dassler-Alfheim, Democrat from Appleton.
One of the dangers of a divided society is that we don't listen to one another. We just listen to one side or another. This is an example of a story that needs to be heard by everyone because it's affecting everyone. I don't care who did it. What I care about is someone fixes it because it matters to our constituents right now.
I don't care who did it. I care that we fix it because it matters for all of us. Thank you, Senator Dassler-Alfheim. She's frequently with me. Love to have her as a guest. Folks, we're going to leave it there. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it will be better if we stand together to demand the changes and fixes to get the subsidy back for the ACA exchanges. Take care, everybody.
Go Brewers!
Go Brewers!
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.